Who are the real people we consider our sages? Who were they in life? What is the legacy they left us? Join Rabbi Danny Sackstein for the next hour as he explores the lives of our Torah giants, the spiritual geniuses who shaped the way we approach Judaism today. That's Focus on Our Sages right now on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soul to Soul. Always wonderful to be with you on a Wednesday afternoon. And we are less than a week away from Pesach. Pesach starts next Monday night. So it's just a few days away, this coming Monday night. So let's talk about Pesach. Let's talk about our preparations for Pesach, which are extensive. And maybe then we'll also have a chance at the end of the show to talk a little bit about the ideas behind Pesach and try and understand what our focus should be on the night of the two Siddurim, of first night and second night Pesach, as well as ideas that we should be passing over to our families, to the next generation, on these two magnificent holy nights. So let's start out with just getting to Pesach. Obviously, we have this Shabbos coming up, which is called Shabbos HaGadol. The Shabbos before Pesach is also always called Shabbos HaGadol, the great Shabbos, because it's before the great festival of Pesach. And the custom is usually the rabbi of the shul gives a drosha, speaks about the laws of Pesach, as well as the ideas of Pesach, which will, I have no doubt, be the case in all the Orthodox synagogues that you attend this Shabbos. We then have on the Erev Pesach is on Monday, this coming Monday, and Erev Pesach is the fast of the firstborn. So since the firstborn in Egypt, was the 10th plague, were wiped out, the firstborns of Israel were spared of that fate, and therefore they have extra hakaras hatov, extra appreciation to Hashem, and they should therefore fast on the day. However, if a person attends a siyum, attends a sudas mitzvah, which means a celebration that's a mitzvah, so then they would be able to participate in that celebration and would be able to partake in the eating at that meal, and then that would allow them to eat the whole day. So that is the custom today generally, is that firstborns make an effort to go to a siyum, and no doubt that your Orthodox synagogues will be organizing siyum in their communities. We at Sunny Road have our siyum on Monday morning, straight off the davening at 7 o'clock. You're welcome to join us. And then the firstborns could eat. It's a firstborn, whether it's a firstborn from the mother or the firstborn from the father, a firstborn is obligated to fast. Firstborn males fast. Firstborn females, our custom is they don't fast. And then, of course, Monday is a very busy day because it's the last time when we can eat chometz, and then we have to also say, so let's actually, before we give those times for Monday, just to mention on Sunday night is what's called Leil Bedikas Chometz. There's an obligation that we search for chometz on Sunday night, and the rabbis instituted that we should, on that night, the night before Pesach, do a thorough search of the house. Now, the Jewish households have been preparing for Pesach for a while and are clearing out the house and getting everything ready for Pesach. But even so, we do a bedika the night before because that is the decree of the rabbis in order to ensure that all of the Jewish people search their premises thoroughly for any chometz, and they either destroy the chometz or they sell it. Now, what's going on Pesach is that there's a prohibition to not own any chometz or to see any chometz in our households. And then there's an additional mitzvah of what's called tashbisu, to destroy the chometz. So we all, as a Jew, every Jew is prohibited from owning chometz and from having chometz around. So we should either get rid of the chometz, or we put it in a place where we seal it, and we seal it closed and we sell the chometz. And so on this coming Sunday night, we all do that thorough check throughout our houses to make sure that we can't find any chometz. These are all Doraisa commandments. These are all commandments from God, from the Torah. Hashem tells us that we are not allowed to have chometz in our premises. So there's two things going on over here. There's owning the chometz, having the chometz in your possession, and there's also eating of the chometz. So the first one that on the Sunday night, which is when we do the bedika, we make sure that there's no chometz around at all. And then, of course, during Pesach, we make sure we don't eat any chometz as well, which we will get to in a moment. So on Sunday night, we should all do a thorough check. We say a bracha, blessing, look it up in your siddur, the blessing for the checking of the chometz. When we've finished, gone through the whole house and checked all the chometz, we then say a bittul, a nullification of the chometz. So actually, either getting rid of the chometz or the nullification, either or would be sufficient. But our sages in the Gemara Pesachim explain that we don't just do the bittul, which means the nullification. We make a declaration that all the chometz in our possession is null and void, is like the dust of the earth. So we worry that if that's all we did and there were still chometz items around, that we would end up eating some of the chometz. And we are also worried that maybe the nullification wasn't sincere and genuine. So therefore, we make sure that we search the house and get rid of the chometz. And why don't we just do search the house and not do a nullification? Because we might miss some chometz. We might actually miss something. So we do both. We cover all the bases. We search and we do the nullification. So the blessing for the search and the nullification will be found in your situr and searching for chometz. Okay, so that's on Sunday night. On Monday, we have, as mentioned, the fast of the firstborns. And then the latest time that we can eat chometz is until 9:45 in the morning. So the last time we can eat chometz on Sunday morning is 9:45. And then we have an additional hour until 10:45 to destroy all the chometz and to say the final bittul. So be careful to say that final bittul before 10:45 on Monday morning. Okay, so let's just talk about a little bit the preparing the house for Pesach. So we go through, let's briefly mention the house, and then we'll look at the kitchen, which of course is much more strict, because in the kitchen we're eating. So remember, we're getting rid of any chometz, we're not allowed to own any chometz or see any chometz, and then of course that's the kitchen where we're eating that we're not allowed to eat even a kosher. So when we're doing the search of chometz, what are we looking for? We're looking for a large piece of inedible chometz. It's got to be more than a kazayis. If it's not edible, if it's nifsal achilas kelev, or a smaller piece of edible chometz. So we're looking for a little bit of a pretzel, a little bit of a biscuit, a little bit of a noodle. Though that's what we're searching for. Or, you know, of course, you know, more than a little bit of all of those things. But if it's inedible, so then it's only a problem if it's a kazayis, which is about the volume of a matchbox, about 28 grams. So that's what we're searching for. We're not searching for crumbs. The kitchen, this is the rest of us, not the kitchen. There is a minhag, some people do search for crumbs, but it's a chumrah and it's not necessary. You just have to search the house for edible pieces of chometz. So you look around in all the drawers, underneath the cushions of the couches, underneath the beds for edible pieces of chometz. And that is sufficient. And one there, so that's the rest of the house. Of course, the dining room where you're going to be eating, so you should wipe the table very well. And you should also, because we put hot things on the table, we should put a cover as well, a plastic cover underneath, you know, the tablecloth. So in case we put something hot on Pesach and it's wet, so then through the heat, it won't transfer to your Pesach pot, etc. So when it comes to dining room and the dining room table, dining room chairs, it is a little bit harder. One should wipe everything with a wet cloth with some detergent on it, you know, with a mixed in with water and detergent. And so wipe the chairs, wipe the table well, so there's no actual chometz, so you're not touching any chometz. And then the table, as mentioned, should have a plastic cover that's underneath the tablecloth. Regular tablecloth is fine for Pesach as long as it's been washed, been through a wash in the washing machine, you can use a regular tablecloth. Okay, so that's the house, the general house. When we come back after this ad break, we'll look at kashering the kitchen Pesach.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
So when it comes to preparing the house for Pesach, so we mentioned the rest of the house. We're looking for a small piece of edible chometz. We clean the house well. We vacuum the carpets. We clean the floors. We check behind the cushions of the couches, under the beds, etc. So that's sufficient for the rest of the house. When it comes to the kitchen, of course, we're far more strict because in the kitchen is where we're eating our food. Now, to eat even a kolshu, a small little crumb on Pesach, is a chiyuv, an isur koras. The punishment is koras, which means we get wiped out spiritually, cut off spiritually from the Jewish world, which is a very big issue. We don't want to be in the firing line of koras because that detaches us from Klal Yisrael. When we detach from Klal Yisrael, there are many benefits being a part of Klal Yisrael. Even if we're not observant of the mitzvahs, as long as we're a Jew, we're part of the descendants of Abraham and Sarah. And that is a very powerful protection for us for eternity. And there are many midrashim, and we won't go into all the details, but Abraham saves his descendants from Gehenna, from the fires of Gehenna, even if they are not meritorious in the lives that they lived, just being a descendant of Avram and Sarah pulls us through. Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'olam haba. Every Jew has a chelek, a portion in olam haba, as the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says. So if we eat chometz on Pesach deliberately, we get chorus, we get cut off from the Jewish people. We're no longer part of Yisrael. We get detached from that bond that connects us through the generations all the way up until our ancestors, the patriarchs and the matriarchs. So we don't want to do that because there'll be eternal suffering as a result. So we need to be very careful not to eat any chametz on Pesach. As mentioned, these are laws that come from God. We can explain, have nice ideas surrounding them, but we don't really understand why God designed the world this way and commanded us to do these things. But we believe in God, and we received the Torah on Mount Sinai, and God gave us his commandments. We entered into a covenant, a bris with God, to follow those commandments. And therefore, we make a tremendous effort to fulfill the requirements of the 8 days of Pesach and not eat any chometz. So when it comes to the kitchen, we have to make sure that there's no, the kitchen is kosher for Pesach, which is quite an effort, takes a lot of work. And so let's briefly go through some of the things we have to do to prepare our kitchens for Pesach. Obviously, the fridge and the freezer are quite difficult to clean out. We have to clean them out entirely, take a wet cloth with detergent, and make sure it touches all of the shelves and all the fridge. The easiest way to do the shelves of the fridge and freezer is to actually remove everything from fridge and freezer, fill up your bath, put the shelves in the bath, put in some water with the detergent, leave them there for about a half an hour, then pull the plug, rinse out all the items, and you can put them back. And once everything's out the fridge and freezer, clean it very well. Again, a cloth with water and detergent. Make sure that mixture from the cloth goes to every corner, every nook and cranny, including the seal on the doors of the fridge. So wipe everything down very well inside the fridge, and then we can bring back the racks and put them back in. So that's how we kosher the fridge and freezer for Pesach. We can have items in the fridge and freezer that we that are chometz. If we're selling our chometz, just make sure that they're in bags that are marked chometz, not kosher for Pesach, as long as you don't take them on Pesach, but they can be sold. But otherwise, be careful to keep your fridge chometz free once it's been cleaned out, and then it's ready for Pesach. The cupboards, the cabinets that are using for Pesach, also, again, you need to clean them out very well, wipe them with a cloth with detergent, and make sure it's squeezed in all the corners, the places you can't really reach. Wipe each part of those shelves. Once you wipe them well, you don't need to cover them. So let's move on into the kitchen. What about the counters? So the kitchen counters and the sinks need to be kashered for Pesach. Again, because even if you've got something that is not chometz, but it's made in a chometz sticker vessel, pot or pan. So we, in halacha, the principle is that these materials, these utensils are porous. They absorb the taste of what's being made. And then when you make something else, the heat causes the taste that was absorbed in the walls and in the bottom to now be reabsorbed back into what you're cooking. So if you don't have a pot or a pan that's kosher for Pesach, it would the chometz that's absorbed from what's cooked in it previously will then enter into the food. And in halacha, the principle is tam ki'ika, the taste is like the thing itself. So then you would be having chometz tikka item. So therefore, you have to have kosher for Pesach pots and pans and kasher the surfaces and the sinks. Otherwise, the taste that has been absorbed will come back into your Pesach items. So that's why we go to such lengths in order to kasher the kitchen. So to kasher the counters, one needs to clean them well, not use them for anything hot for 24 hours, and then pour boiling water on the surfaces. So your marble or your granite or your vinyl, all of these items can be kashered. So you pour the boiling water, make sure the boiling water you take, it shouldn't be a Pesach kettle. It should be your usual kettle used during the year, or a pot that you use during the year, and pour it onto those surfaces. Make sure the stream from the kettle touches each part of the surface, which is quite difficult to do. And it means that you've got to, you know, reheat. I use my urn, my Shabbos urn, which is quite large. And so there's more water, so it's very heavy, but I move it around, make sure that the boiling water from the urn touches each part of that surface, both for your counters and for your sinks. If you're kashering, you don't need to cover. If you cover, you don't need to kasher. So if you have a cover for your surfaces, to cover the surfaces, your counters, so some people have like metal covers, some people have thick plastic covers, as long as it won't break during Pesach, so then you don't have to kasher it. Once it's covered and it won't split, you know, it won't tear, so then it's covered for Pesach, that's fine, that's good enough. And likewise with the sinks, if you're covering your sinks, if you're using inserts to the sink, then you don't need to kasher them. But usually it's not so easy to do that, and you've got the sides of the sinks, so you can, you know, if you're just putting an insert, you need to kasher the sides of the sinks unless you cover them. So the sinks too, our metal sinks can be kashered with the same way. Pour boiling water on the sink, make sure it gets to all the parts of the sink, put the hot tap on, pour the boiling water over the taps, over the spout of the taps, while the hot water is coming through, pour the boiling water down the drain so it destroys anything that's there in case there's a blockage and it comes back into your sink. And that's how you kasher your sinks. Okay, so that covers the fridge, the freezer, the counters, the sinks. When it comes to pots and pans and utensils, we recommend having Pesach items. It's very difficult to kasher all these things. Therefore, one should build up one's Pesach kitchen and have separate pots and pans and cutlery and crockery for Pesach, because it is very difficult to kasher these things. Many of these things you can't kasher at all. So therefore, that's why people have separate utensils for Pesach. The question about ovens, and it is a bigger question, can you kasher your oven for Pesach? There are different opinions in halacha. Those that are lenient say you can. It's very difficult to do so, and to do so properly. And also the grates that are in the ovens can't be kashered. You have to have new Pesach grates as well. And likewise for the microwave oven, you'd have to have a new glass tray at the bottom for Pesach. You can't kasher it. So we therefore again recommend for Pesach to have a Pesach oven and to have a Pesach microwave oven. If you can't manage all of these things, contact your local Orthodox rabbi and he will tell you what to do. If you have a self-cleaning oven, which reaches very high temperatures, so that can be kashered. And the grates in the self-cleaning oven can be kashered. But today, they don't make self-cleaning ovens very often. They used to, but today they've stopped. So the self-cleaning oven gets to very high temperatures. So the requirements called libun gamur, libun kal. The many detailed halachas that are at play over here. So if you do want to kasher your oven and you don't have a choice, you can't buy one, which is definitely ideal. And, you know, make the commitment 1 year and then you have it every year, your special Pesach oven, store it away from the kitchen, or unless you have a Pesach kitchen, which is the best of all options. But then if you have your Pesach oven, it's wonderful. You'll use it every year. You don't have this problem. If you can't, contact your local Orthodox rabbi and he will guide you through it. It's easier to kasher your gas stove. The gas stove can be kashered, so I'll just quickly mention how to do that. Today, a lot of people have gas, especially with load shedding. It's cheaper and it's an efficient way of cooking, and available even during load shedding. So with the gas, the grates upon which the pot rests can't be kashered. Ideally, you should have new ones for Pesach. If you can't, cover them with tinfoil. Cover them well with tinfoil, thick tinfoil, and then you could use the grates. The burners themselves, clean them well. Don't use them for 24 hours, and then put them on for 10 minutes on the maximum setting of the flame. And the surface around the grates, so clean it well. Don't use it for 24 hours. Ideally, you should pour boiling water on it and then cover it with tinfoil, because it can tear and there's a lot of heat, it can burn. So in this instance, we both kasher and we cover. So the grates can be done. The ovens themselves are more difficult. Okay, so that's a nice overview of the halachas of kashering our home and our kitchens for Pesach. I know I went a bit fast, but again, if you have issues, contact your local Orthodox rabbi and he'll guide you through that process. Let's talk a little bit about the halachas of the Seder, but maybe let's talk a little bit about the Seder itself and the ideas behind the Seder, and then we can end off with some halachas of the Seder. Pesach is the powerful, incredible story of the Jewish people. And as the famous historians say, if you don't know where you've come from, you don't know where you're going. Pesach is the time when we share the story of the Jewish people with ourselves and with our children and our grandchildren. And it's the time where we impart this very important information about where we come from, who we are, and that then is self-explanatory as to where we're going. The Jewish people are a people that were born in very unique circumstances, were redeemed from those difficult times of suffering, and forged a unique covenant with God at Mount Sinai, which is the credo which defines who we are, which is the definition of and the mission of the Jewish people. And so it's so important that our children are aware of that, that we educate them in the history of the Jewish people, in the beginnings of the Jewish people, in the roots of Klal Yisrael. And that then explains very clearly who we are as a people and what our purpose and mission is in this world. Isn't it sad that so many Jews are not aware of the basic fundamentals of the history of their people and of the mission of their people? It's a very sad state of affairs. And so in South Africa, Baruch Hashem, we are traditional and we are connected and we all have a Jewish pride and we have a Jewish education and Jewish knowledge, a basic Jewish knowledge. And we should try and we should take that very seriously and use the beautiful time and opportunity of Pesach, not just for another family gathering to talk about politics and the weather and the elections in South Africa. That's not what Pesach is about. Pesach is about going through the Haggadah and with a seriousness and with a joy and with an inspiration, relating, passing over the story of the Jewish people. The mitzvah on both Sidurim, on the night of Pesach, is called the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the mitzvah of relating the story of Mitzrayim. The Gemara Pesachim says that we should be matchil b'gnus u'masayim b'shvach. We start telling the story of how the lowly, difficult experience of the Jewish people was. In other words, we begin with the suffering that we experienced in Egypt, and then we end with the praise of Hashem who brought us out with supernatural miracles, which are quite incredible. So the Gemara actually says, "Doresh me arami oived avi ad sheyigmor kol haparsha kula." The structure of the Haggadah comes from what's called arami oived avi, that my father was a arami. He was from Aram, and he worshipped idols. That was the father of Abraham. That's the beginnings of the Jewish people. So we started with very humble beginnings, and we relate that whole parsha. What's that parsha? It's referring to the section in the Torah which is called Bikurim. There was a mitzvah of Bikurim when a Jew living in the land of Israel would plant, would harvest, and would now have the first fruits of that season. There would be a mitzvah to take those first fruits to the temple in Yerushalayim. And that was called Bikurim. Bikurim was, it was a beautiful ceremony. It was during Shavuos time. And those fruits would be then presented to the Kohen in a basket at the base of Mikdash, which would be one of the highlights of the year for the Jewish people. Now, the question is, why is the Haggadah? And then the person who's bringing their first fruits would make this whole declaration from Arami Oved Avi and go through the panorama of Jewish history. The Haggadah is built on those verses that the person bringing the first fruits would say when they went to the Beis HaMikdash. But the question is, why is the Haggadah built about around those verses? Although it gives us the whole history, surely the Haggadah should be based on the parshas of Shmos, Va'era, Bo, which deal with the story of the Jewish people in Egypt and coming out of Egypt. Why do they come from there? So there's a sefer called Yerech Lemu'adim. I heard this from Rabbi Friend. It's a very beautiful idea. And the sefer Yerech Lemu'adim tells us that although, why is Bikurim so important? Because the Midrash tells us in the beginning of the Torah that Bereshis bara Elokim es hashamayim va'aretz, in the beginning Hashem created the heavens and the earth. Bishvil Reishis, that you can break that word of Reishis in Bishvil Reishis, for the first I created the world, Hashem says. So Torah is Nikra Bereishis, the Torah is called the first, Yisrael are Nikra Bereishis, are called the first, and Bikurim Nikra Bereishis. Bikurim is called the first, it's the first fruits. So why is Bikurim so important and actually mentioned with Israel and with the Torah? The reasons why Hashem created the world, it seems like Bikurim is a little bit out of place over here. The first fruits, yes, it's a nice idea. It's a beautiful thing to do. But are they on the level of Torah in Israel? So it explains the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh, who was a great rabbi who lived in Sfat in the 16th century. He says that the reason why Bikurim is so important is Bikurim is an expression of Hakaras HaTov. Hakaras HaTov means appreciation. Bikurim is the place in the Torah that teaches us to show appreciation to God for what we have. The first fruits are now emerged, and we've harvested them, and we have these fruits. We show appreciation to Hashem. And so we see from here, since the Haggadah is based on the Bikurim, on the verses that the person is bringing the first fruits, says in the temple, we see that the Yesod, the foundation of the Haggadah, is Hakaras HaTov, because Bikurim is a place in the Torah that tells us about appreciation. And so the whole theme and atmosphere of the Pesach Seder is Hakaras HaTov, is showing appreciation to Hashem. So that is the point we're trying to highlight during the Haggadah. That's what we're doing at the Pesach Seder, is expressing our appreciation and our gratitude to Hashem. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
So we're discussing the Seder, and the focus of the Seder, as we mentioned, is Hakaras HaTov, since the Seder is built around the verses of Bikurim, of what a Jew would say when they presented their first fruits to the temple, called the Bikurim, and that is those verses that are in Parsha Kisavu in the Torah are the centerpiece of the Seder, and the elaboration of the Seder is built around those verses, and that teaches us, says the Sefer Yerech Lemo'adim, that the focus of the Seder, that the thrust of the Seder is Hakaras HaTov, is showing appreciation to Hashem. And that therefore should be a major overview that we should all be taking and the point that we should be emphasizing during the Seder. And in fact, the Maharal says, the great and holy Maharal says, that this answers a very important question when we know that the essence of the Seder is Hakaras HaTov. Because the Maharal says in his Haggadah, Gevuras Hashem, he says that our sages teach us that Kol HaMar B'Lesapu L'Yetzias Mitzrayim Harei Zeh Meshubach. Anybody who increases in their explanation of the great miracles and wonders that Hashem performed for the Jewish people coming out of Egypt, that is praiseworthy. Harei Zeh Meshubach. But the Maharal says, however, we see that there's a question over here. Why do we say this is praiseworthy? We know that the Gemara in Brachos says, quotes the pasuk, the verse that says, "Mi yemala gvuros Hashem, yashmiya kol tehillasoy." Who can relate the power of Hashem? Yashmiya kol tehillasoy. Person should make heard all of Hashem's praises. And the Gemara goes on to say that there was an individual who was praising Hashem, and the Chachamim, and he got up.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
Sorry about that. We got cut off. I had a power failure, but the power's back. And thanks to Craig for quickly stepping in and playing the song. And it's good to be back with you. So just to end off, maybe I'll just share with you a beautiful idea of the Vilna Gaon, the great and holy Vilna Gaon, who lived in the 18th century in Vilna. And he says a beautiful idea. The Vilna Gaon says, we're going to be saying the Manishtana on Pesach, on Monday night and Tuesday night. And in Manishtana, we ask, what is different? Manishtana, alala zebech, mikol alalos. What's different about this night? And we ask four questions and we answer the four questions. So the Vilna Gaon says, actually, the Manishtana itself is a question too, but saying, why is this not different, apart from the four questions that we answer afterwards? And he says that question is really asking, why is this night a night where we have mitzvahs that only apply to the night? There's no other night in the calendar, according to the Torah, where there are mitzvahs that only apply to the night. So we have days which mitzvahs only applies to those days, and there's some things that apply to the day and the night, but there's nothing else where the mitzvahs are only in the night apart from the first night of Pesach. Why is that? And the Vilna Gaon explains very beautifully. He says that based on the pasuk in Tehillim Kuf Yutes, the pasuk says Yaila Laila Kayom Ya'ir, the night will illuminate like the day. So even though it's night and it's dark, there's a light that shines in that night, the Or HaGeula, the light of redemption. And he quotes the Zohar. The Zohar, of course, is the classic work of Jewish mysticism of Kabbalah. The Zohar says, Lamadnu sha'alayla hazeh me'ir ketufas tamuz, that this night of Pesach, the light shine brightly like a midsummer's day. V'ra'a kol ha'am es dinav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On this night, the whole nation, the nation of Klal Yisrael, saw the judgment of Hashem. V'zehu she'am ha'shed laila k'yom ha'ir. And that's what the Pasuk in Tehillim says. It's referring to the night of Pesach, on the first and second night of Pesach that we celebrate, that the light shone like the day, which is an amazing thing. That it wasn't the difference between night and day in the Torah terms, in halachic terms, is that day is a time of clarity. Daytime we can see. Daytime we know what's in front of us and behind us. At night it's dark. At night it's black. At night we can't see, and we are left exposed to the elements, and we have no clarity at all. So the night of Pesach, even though it's night, it's like a day where we see very clearly that Hashem changes the laws of nature on behalf of Klal Yisrael. On the night of Pesach, we learn this concept called Hashchacha Pratis, which means divine providence, that Hashem lifted Klal Yisrael above the laws of nature. Hashem performed supernatural miracles that supersede nature on behalf of the Jewish people. And we see that Hashem cares deeply for Klal Yisrael, not only for the nation, but for the individual members of that nation. There's such a concept called Hashkacha Pratis. There's such a concept called divine intervention in the world. So that's the clarity that we're celebrating on Pesach. So yes, the Haggadah is all about Hakaras HaTov and showing appreciation. We're showing appreciation for God's intervening into the rules of nature and performing supernatural miracles on behalf of the Jewish people. And it's with that clarity that we will understand what and why in terms of Klal Yisrael. The Pasuk in Micha says that when the future redemption comes, La'asid Lavo in the future, so the Pasuk says, Nisiv Niflaos Kayom Tzesacham Mitzrayim, that Hashem will perform miracles and wonders like the day we came out of Egypt. So just as that night that we came out was the light of clarity shone for the Jewish people, so too it will do so in the future. And then we'll understand the tribulations and the sufferings of Klal Yisrael. And from the beginning until now, it's been quite a ride. There's been a lot of challenges from the Jewish people, from the destruction of the first temple, destruction of the second temple. We can just take the last 100,000 years, the Crusades in the 9th and 10th century, the expulsion from Spain, in the expulsion from England in the 11th century, the Spanish Inquisition in the 15th century, the terrible massacres of Khmelnytsky in the 17th century, the brutal pogroms of the 18th and 19th century, the Holocaust in the 20th century, the challenges we're facing right now today with Israel being attacked both by Hamas and by Iran, and then the whole world protesting against Israel and the existence of Israel. It's bizarre, isn't it? Absolutely crazy that we're the victims, but they turn it to make us the perpetrators, which is completely false and a distortion of the reality. So, you know, there's something unique about the Jewish people. There's something different that we held to a higher standard and we go through different challenges to the other nations of the world. And when the Geula comes, when the redemption comes, just like the night was illuminated with tremendous clarity when we came out of Egypt, so too we will understand. We understand why this is all happening to us. And we have a unique mission, Klal Yisrael. All of these events, Hashem is communicating to us. Hashem is screaming to us, don't think that you're the same as the nations of the world and that your mission is the same as everybody else. You are a unique nation. You are a people who has a elevated and holy mission to bring the light of God into the world. And each and every Jew needs to play their part in Klal Yisrael, in fulfilling that role and teaching the world about morality and about spirituality and about God. And that is our purpose and mission in this world. And we can't get away from that. We can't try and dodge and avoid and shirk our responsibility. That is who we are. That is our core. That is our credo. And that is what Hashem wants us to do. So please, God, we should all celebrate this Pesach. We should all appreciate the kindness of Hashem, have appreciation to Hashem for our families and for the great gifts that Hashem bestows upon us. And please, God, we should all see the great light of the future redemption, just like we saw it when God took us out of Egypt. Wishing everybody a Chag Kashav Sameach. Thank you for listening and have a wonderful day.